The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Elisa Carcar, bringing you honest conversations to support and inspire you as we navigate this wild parenting journey together. Today, I'm joined by Sophia Hermans, the founder of Rising Sons, a year-long program bringing fathers and sons together through monthly gatherings, meaningful connection, and community support for boys age 8 to 10 right here in St. Albans. We're going to chat about her journey, what inspired her to create Rising Sons, the challenges facing boys and young men today, and how the program is helping families strengthen that all-important father-son bond. Sophia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Elisa. So good to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's get into it, Sophia. Thank you so much for joining us. Could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and your own journey?
So I'm Sophia. I set up Rising Sons this year, and it really does feel as though so much of my journey has been leading towards this point. A long time ago, I was an employment lawyer at a big city firm, working in the space of family-friendly policies, discrimination. I've always really cared about the gender balance, about a more equal world, and have really striven to make that happen in any space that I've been in. After I left the law, I worked for Jamie Oliver in educational fundraising. I helped out on Jamie's big night out, which was to raise money for his chef school when disadvantaged boys who'd been in prison often trained as chefs. That was a wonderful project and I really enjoyed working with them. And then I worked again in fundraising for the International School of Geneva and Geneva University when we lived in Switzerland. Came back, began my training as a psychotherapist, and this was after having been at home with the children for a long time. And that was a big step, going back out in the world, really thinking carefully about where I wanted to go, what my passions were, not wanting to waste that moment of kind of re-entry into the workforce. So started training as a psychotherapist and then came across an amazing organization called Rights for Girls. And they were offering training to be a Girls Journey Together facilitator. And I snapped that up. I think I was the last to join that year's training. Loved the training and began running Girls Journey Together groups in St. Albans for girls aged 10 to 12 as they take their first steps into puberty, into adolescence. And so many mums kept saying to me, what is there for boys? What is there out there for our boys? I'm worrying about being a boy mum. I'm stressed about the social media aspect, the gaming, pornography, all of the things that I haven't experienced as a woman, as a female, as a girl growing up. I don't know how to handle this. Is there anything for boys? And I kept saying, well, Rights for Girls doesn't do anything for boys, but there's this organization. They tend to support teens. There was nothing in the preteen space. So after a while, and being a boy mum myself, my boy was 6, 7, I think, at that point, I started thinking, I wonder if I could do this. It's important. I wonder if I could do this. And started designing a program, started talking to people. So many people said, absolutely do this. This is so important. And then a couple of things happened in our family life. My daughter had a couple of encounters, let's say unpleasant encounters at school in her friendship group, which really moved my thinking forward, because obviously our community is white, middle class, privileged in Albans. And I was really conscious that if those incidents could happen with her and here, things really do need to change for our boys. So that moved my thinking on. And then, of course, we had adolescence, which brought all of the conversations I was having with my circle, my friends, the people that would listen to me and my ideas, that it brought it into the mainstream. So it felt as though the whole world was talking about teen boys, at which point I said to my other half, if I don't make this happen now, somebody else will, and I'll have wasted all the work that I put in so far. So I think within a year, we launched.
Amazing. And so you are now kind of fresh off a very recent launch. For listeners who may well be hearing about this for the very first time, can you explain what the initiative is all about, what happens within the program, and really what the overall goals are?
Yes. The overall goal is connection, 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 connection. Boys and dads spending more time together, regular time together, where they can really get a window into each other's lives, have fun together, laugh together. Our programs are hilarious. I actually employed a fun consultant to go over the materials that I designed to make sure that they were appropriate for boys aged 8, 9, and 10, because that's something I've never been. And I have many skills, but I wouldn't say that play and lots of fun are up there in terms of my skill set. So this wonderful man, Hake, came, and who is now actually one of our St. Albans facilitators. He reviewed all of the programs and turned everything into games. And the boys and the dads just laugh all the way through, which is so fun. And of course, they're learning, but they're learning in a way that, or they're reflecting, they're learning, they're thinking about the topics, but in a way that is coming in so lightly and so gently, rather than an education, an educative program that is saying that boys should be a certain way or men should parent in a certain way. We are not a parenting course. We are not group therapy. We are absolutely not anything heavy and prescriptive. It's a space where boys can really explore what it means to be a boy and what it means to be a man. They have access to all these role models, these other men, these other fathers who are invested, who are showing up for their boys. So they can look at, oh, that dad's doing that like that. My dad does it like that. What does that mean? What do I prefer? What do I think of that? They really get to engage with what it means to be a boy and a man in this world and how they might want to show up as they get older. So I suppose we're planting seeds, but we're doing it in such a light touch way. And our facilitators, obviously, we choose our facilitators with enormous care, and they are incredible men. I'm learning so much from them and having so much fun collaborating with them, because I've worked with women for a long time, which has been incredibly nourishing and very fulfilling for me personally. And now this working with men so much more is really expanding my own horizons, my personal growth. I'm really developing as a colleague and as a founder, because I'm getting so many different types of input from the men I'm working with.
Wow. It sounds amazing. I wonder, with it being such a new initiative, and often today still women are the ones who are taking the majority of the sort of mental load and the childcare and organizing the activities and potentially doing these sorts of things with their children, boys and girls. How was it kind of getting that word out and sort of, I guess, onboarding those dads? Was it tricky, or did you find people were absolutely up for it because this kind of appetite was there with all the things that you mentioned before?
Such a great question. So what we found was the dads who get it immediately. And they're like, yes, I want that for my boy. The best reception, I won't lie, was definitely from the mums, and particularly the mums who already invested in their daughters, a lot of the mums who asked me in my Girls Journey Together role were very excited to hear that something was going to be available for boys. I think the dads were a little bit more skeptical in general. I suppose it's a space that is not particularly usual in our society. And I think it's something that's quite hard to explain if you haven't experienced it. So that's why the trial session was so useful. A lot of the dads came and they're like, well, let's check it out. Let me see what it's like. And then what was so wonderful was that I heard from many of the mums by text straight afterwards, yes, he loved it. He actually had a good time. And that to me was the best feedback ever, because the mums were all right there. They were like, yes, he needs this. My boy needs this. They need this together. But you know, if the dad isn't enjoying the 2 hours of the program, then it's not going to make any difference.
Yeah. So in a way, to get it off the ground, it was liaising with the mums to get the dads and the sons there for the trial, and then they experience it with themselves and they're like, this is so good for us.
And I think that will happen less and less because it's new, and because obviously I'm here in St. Albans and this is my community. I was working through a lot of my female friends and the mums I know. And of course, my boy is also this age, so it was my network. I think as we train more facilitators, because this is a really exciting thing that's happening this week, we're launching a crowdfunder tomorrow because so many people in different areas of the country have said, can I run Rising Suns in my community? We've got men approaching us every week saying, please, can I run this program? And so to train them, we need money. And we definitely want to train them because we feel that every boy should have access to a Rising Suns program with their dad across the country. I think as we have more and more facilitators who are well connected in their community, obviously they will go through their men network, their dad network, and of course the mums who are often quite plugged into what's going on in the community for the children. The mums will be really important in sending their children and their husbands to Rising Suns. But I think as we have more and more facilitators, then it will come from the dads themselves. It will expand organically from the dads. And we're seeing so many more dads groups, dads Instagram, dads Facebook groups. It's just lovely that there are so many more fathers actively stepping in to be engaged in a different way, in an emotional way, in a present way, from certainly how it was when I was a girl.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I was reading some of your kind of comms, you were, you know, talking about wanting to have a different relationship with your child than perhaps you had with your dad. Maybe the kind of relationship that you would have loved to have had, but it just wasn't possible. It wasn't the thing. We didn't talk about our feelings and we didn't talk about any of these sorts of things. And men weren't seen to be vulnerable and emotional.
Men weren't allowed to be vulnerable and emotional. Men weren't allowed to be sad. They weren't allowed to cry. I mean, I'm really over our boys not being allowed to access the full range of human emotions like our girls are. It's time. They deserve to have access to all the emotions in the same way that our girls do. And as part of our preparation for our crowdfunder, we've been talking to lots of men and asking what they wish they'd had from their dad. And some of the responses have been utterly heartbreaking, just so, so gut-wrenchingly sad. And what I'm learning is that there are many adult men of my generation, so, you know, 40 to 60, that really didn't have good relations with their own fathers, didn't have a role model of how to parent, how to be a father. And so are making it up in a way that they think is right, is best. They're taking what they hoped were good qualities, or some of them are just repeating because they don't have any other way. And this is why the Rising Suns program is so rich for the men themselves, because they also get a community of other men, of other fathers at the same stage of parenting, and they can look and say, oh, that dad is doing it like that with his son. I wonder why. What would that be like for me to try it like that? They expand their ideas of what it means to be a dad and a man. And I think that's something that women, we almost do naturally. We're the ones that continue with the NCT group. We go to baby groups, often because we're not working in those early years and therefore we have the time and the space and the ability. But dads, you know, it could, like Catelyn Moran says in her book, when her husband, oh, it's a great book, What About Men? Great book by Catelyn Moran, I really recommend it. She says that her husband goes off and they talk about, he talks about football with his friend. And then he comes back and she says, oh, well, you know, how's the baby and how was the hospital visit for the wife? And he said, oh, don't know, didn't talk about that. And they bond in a different way. So it's just really lovely for the men to be able to come together and be in community and engaged with the parenting from a different perspective, from a very present, very emotionally engaged perspective. And the feedback we're also getting is that that's far more fun than they necessarily realized.
Yeah, amazing. I had goosebumps on a couple of moments then when you were talking. I think, like you say, if those spaces don't exist and that norm isn't there, then how are we expecting that to change? Right. Like those, in the way that you just described, there's so many different spaces for the mums, and we're just sort of naturally attuned to reach out to friends and ask advice and all of that. But I'm sure, you know, my husband has many times wanted to be able to reach out to another man to ask him advice on all of this stuff, but it's just sort of not the done thing because these spaces haven't existed before.
And men are still sadly not allowed to show vulnerability. The space point is so important too, because, and I was talking about this with Victoria Collins, the MP for Berkhamsted and Harpenden. She was saying that the decline of safe third spaces, so this space between home and school where children can go and play and have fun and actually be engaged and entertained, but it's not at home with family or in bedrooms with screens, and it's not at school in the educational setting. We have fewer and fewer third spaces. Youth clubs don't exist anymore. There are playgrounds, but of course, the way we're parenting now is that we overprotect extremely, to the extreme, in the real world, and we underprotect online. I think the stats, I'm not going to even try, but the stat about meeting a predator on Roblox as opposed to in your local park, and it's, you're so much more likely to be in danger on Roblox than you are on your own, you know, as a tween child on your own in the park. So again, Rising Suns offers that engagement, that space for boys to come together to let us see there's so much movement, there's so much running and laughter and activity, but that it's not an educational, it's not in the context of school and it's not in the context of home. And that we really need more of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. With a 10 and a 14-year-old, I feel the gap of that third space, and I'm really sad about it. I went to a youth club and, you know, that was such a rite of passage and all that kind of freedom and, you know, opportunity to make mistakes and learn from them, but in, you know, with a little bit of supervision as well. It's,
as we get older, of course, because in the early teen years, we as parents still aren't comfortable to let them just go. But there is nowhere for them to go that is that halfway house, that kind of stepping stone. And what we would love to see, I mean, I'm really big picture here, but once we've got the program really up and running, and we train more facilitators and we've scaled across the country so that every boy can have a Rising Suns program, and so that dads are saying to other dads, what, you're not doing Rising Suns? Why not? So it's a bit, it would just be obvious that you do it, like scouts or like, I don't know, like football on a Saturday. You're not doing Rising Suns on a Saturday afternoon. What's the matter with you? What I would then love to see happen would be for Rising Suns to develop and to deepen so that the boys and the dads can be together all through their teens, all the way up to A-levels. So we would have a year's program for years 6 and 7, year 8 and 9, year 10 and 11, and year 12 and 13, so that we provide that space, that time, that regular repeated interaction for boys and dads, and that they come to rely on it as part of their connection. And then we would then get to discuss or to bring up all the important topics that we need our teen boys to be thinking about, of course, in an age-appropriate way. And the seeds that we're sowing in the current program for year 4 and 5 can then be revisited from an age-appropriate way at the age of 15, 16, 17. I mean, that to me would be so valuable and rich for our boys. And of course, by extension, for our girls.
And these meetings are once a month, aren't they? And I can imagine how much that father and son would look forward to that, because as much as we all are striving to ensure that we give our children one-to-one time, you know, if you've got multiple children, you're working full-time through the week, busy with sports and commitments at the weekend, it's really hard to find that one-to-one time. So to know that you've, you know, at least, hopefully there's more pepper throughout that month, but there's that session, just like it's booked in, we're going, it's in the calendar, nothing can, you know, get in the way of that. I think that's really beautiful.
There's so much pressure on our on us as parents to spend one-to-one time, to be emotionally present, to put down our phone, to stop work early, to get to the play, to get to the sharing assembly, whatever it might be. We are all juggling so much and it's exhausting. We're all exhausted by that. I think, yeah, as you say, the idea of having something regular that's almost already approved, like mum is happy with this, dad is enjoying this, dad is getting stuff out of this, boy is getting something out of this. So many, I mean, I'm thinking of our own kind of family dates and days out. You know, we can plan till the cows come home and it can still be an absolute disaster. I can take my boy on a, we call them mother-son dates, or my daughter on a mother-daughter date. And through all our good intentions, it can sometimes not be everything I'd hoped, because obviously our hopes are always high. Whereas, you know, this is a program you're paying for, you're allowed to expect it to be good. And then when it is good, you can come home with a big smile on your face saying that was worth the 2 hours I just invested. Mm-hmm. So it takes, it in some ways, it actually does take the pressure off to outsource the planning and, yeah, and the thinking.
Yeah, totally. And for a dad who's listening in, or a mum who's thinking, I need to talk to my husband about this, just to kind of bring it to life a little bit more. So it's once a month, it's 2 hour session. How does those 2 hours flow? I'm sure it kind of is a flowy thing and, you know, the structure changes. But if you could give a taste to bring it to life of what they'd be doing together in that session.
So games. Each session has a topic. So we're coming up to session 3, which is letting go of perfection. We're really excited to see how that goes. We're obviously listening really carefully to the boys and the dads in our pilot sessions. We're piloting St. Albans and Brighton at the same time this year. And we are weaving in all the feedback that we get back. And actually it was so interesting. One dad right at the beginning said, this was really fun. When are we going to talk about our feelings? And then another dad said, this was really fun. Is it going to turn into group therapy? So I had the two ends of the spectrum, and I reassured both sides that yes, we will talk about feelings, but at the right time, we're building trust and we're going slowly. We share stories. They move. They laugh. They challenge their dads. The dads challenge the boys. They act. There's quite a lot of acting. There's also one of my favorite games is actually in session 1. We have the serious interview, and it is a very serious interview, and the boys interview the dads and the dads interview the sons as if they don't know each other. So they're asking questions for the very first time and they're really getting to know this person in front of them. And of course, that's really fun. And the boys are laughing. Well, actually, the whole point of the serious interview is you're supposed to do it without laughing, which they can't do at all. What is also really special for that is that there will be some dads who maybe don't know the name of their little boy's best friend at school, that haven't had the time to know what they're struggling with at school at this particular point. And it's a really gentle way of bringing in what is important for that boy at this time. So the dad gets a window into the boy's world, and it's all done through play. It's all done with smiles, but it's just giving really valuable information to a dad who, through no fault of his own, just might not have been able to have that information.
Amazing. It's just so new, I know, but is there any particular stories or aha moments that's kind of made you feel like, oh, this is the right thing to be doing? I'm really glad we're doing this.
Oh my gosh. So many. Festival of the Boy. When we went to Festival of the Boy and we had dads and mums and boys coming up over and over again saying, this is so exciting. I want to be part of this. We had a number of men come up to us at Festival of Boy and say, can we train? Actually, and there was one particular man, Chris, I will never forget Chris. He stood at our stall at Festival of the Boy and he was holding our orange post-it notes, and the post-it notes were to answer the question, what do you wish you'd known when you were nine? And his boy was doing the activity on the stall, so he was being occupied. And I watched as Chris, with all the hubbub of the people around him, he just disappeared. I could see he'd gone somewhere very far away. His eyes, you know, his eyes just, he was out of the room. And I left him for a minute and then I went back over and said, gosh, you've gone somewhere very far away. Are you okay? I said, what's your answer to the question? And he looked at me, he said, I can't answer this. Just all the things I didn't have. And he welled up and I welled up and he said, I'm so glad you're doing this. It's so important. We need to do better for our boys. And that, I mean, my heart still. So yeah, Chris was very special. And we will do better for our boys. There are so many people working so hard in this space. I mean, What Makes a Man, A Call to Men, the wonderful authors. I mean, Building Boys Better. A new book has just come out. Boy Mum, Talk to Your Boys, Raising Boys Who Do Better. Uju is at Festival of the Boys. She's incredible. So I feel that there is a groundswell of energy and enthusiasm and support for us to do better by our boys. And this doesn't mean to say, and I think this is so important and I don't want this to get lost, by empowering our boys, this doesn't mean to say we're stopping empowering our girls. Our girls are still obviously in need of so many things, and the Fording Bridge case last week only underlines how things do need to change for our girls. Whoa, that's a whole other discussion. But by empowering our boys, we benefit our girls. Everybody benefits. We lift each other by empowering both girls and boys. And it's time. It's time that our boys have a different world, that they grow up in a different way, that they have, like I said before, they have access to the full range of human emotions and they can feel in the same way that our girls do. I'm done with this whole, you know, protect your girls, empower your girls. We need to educate our boys. We need to model differently for our boys. Our boys need access to male role models, positive male role models, so that they can see what good men look like, how to show up in the world. And that in itself is an antidote to all the things that we're worrying about as parents, the male influences. I'm not even going to honor him by mentioning his name. Yeah, the connection with dads, with men, reflecting on what it means to be a boy, how they want to show up, how we want the world to be different for our boys, what we wish we'd had at that age and how we can give that to our children. But having the time and the space to actually engage with these questions is what is so needed and what is so hard in our insanely busy lives when everybody is overscheduled and everybody is exhausted. So, yeah, my hopes are high and the feedback so far has been phenomenal. So crowdfunder tomorrow, and with luck, we will be able to have 10 new facilitators in 10 new communities across the UK by this time next year.
That is amazing. Thank you, Sophia, for everything you're doing. I think this is so vital. It's so needed. And yeah, thank you, because starting something up like this requires such a lot of personal energy. It takes such a lot of toll on the family. It sort of will have taken over your life, I'm sure, in many ways. But you're right, it is so needed. And we need more people like you who are willing to put that energy in and stand up for our boys and create this kind of space and this positive change. If people listening would like to get involved and support your work, attend an event, get involved in a program, get involved in the crowdfunder, how can they do that?
Thank you for asking. So Instagram @RisingSonsUK, and that's sons with an O. Our website is risingsuns.org.uk, and I am Sophia at risingsuns.org.uk, and I read every email and would love to hear from you.
Amazing. Sophia, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such an inspiring conversation. The work you're doing with Rising Suns feels really needed right now, both here in St. Albans and beyond across the nation. So we really appreciate you sharing your time, your story with us, and I'm so excited to see what comes next for you.
Thank you, Lisa. It's been an absolute joy to be here. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. Today, I was joined by Sophia Hermans, founder of Rising Suns, talking about guiding boys into manhood and the power of bringing fathers and sons together through community and connection. Sophia also shared some moving stories of transformation, personal reflection, and reminded us that this work isn't about telling boys who to become, but helping them discover who they already are. If you'd like to find out more about the program, register your interest, or get involved here in St. Albans, you can visit risingsuns.org.uk, and you'll also find them on Instagram and Facebook at risingsunsuk. I'm Elisa Karkar, and I'll be back next time with more honest conversations to support and inspire you on your parenting journey. Until then, take care.
We'll take a quick break now on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Jeanette Kennedy, who is a chartered financial planner at DGS Independent Financial Advisors. So, Jeanette, thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show today.
No problem. Nice to be here. Thank you.
I can ask you all those stupid questions that I've never understood anything to do with finance or financial planning. So it's brilliant to get to pick your brains on the show.
Excellent. Well, I think you're not alone in that. So yeah, ask away.
Great stuff. Okie doke. So today we're going to focus on child benefits. And if we've time, we'll move on to childcare and early years funding. So, right, let's start off with child benefits, Jeanette. Tell us what's available out there. Tell us how the system works at the moment for a start.
Well, I think the most important thing to understand is you need to claim it. If you don't claim it, nobody comes knocking on your door. And I think it's really easy, as we all know, when you've got a young baby, filling in paperwork or going online could be the last thing you want to do. But if you don't claim it, you won't get it. But that's not an irretrievable situation, but it is worth having. But there are a few things that I think we need to sort of add into that in itself. But I'll explain. For your eldest or your first child, you get £27.05. And for each additional child, and there's no upper limit on the payments, it's £17.90. And that's paid every 4 weeks. And that's paid until the child turns 16. Or if you begin to earn over the limits. So that's the big caveat. And this is why lots of people don't claim it, because they think, oh, I'm not entitled to it. My household is, you know, fortunate enough to have a high income. There's no point. But the problem with that is that if you don't claim it, it links into other things such as credit for your state pension. So you get national insurance credits if you make this claim that you may not get if you're having a period out of work. So you wouldn't be getting national insurance because you're working and paying that. You need to get this credit against your national insurance record, because that effectively buys your state pension. So there's a lot of things in that.
There is. And that's a total eye opener. I had no idea. And I bet there's loads of parents listening in going, damn it. So you did say a lovely word. not irretrievable. So that, I'm going to come back to that when you're ready.
Yes.
But so it links to your pension. I did not know that. Tell us more.
Well, the thing about it is that it, when you claim until your child turns 12, you can get NASH insurance credits because you're basically, you're a primary carer. And so if you're not working or you have a period out of work, instead of having to think, oh, now I need to go back in and do this, or I need to make some other arrangements. And I have encountered people who've even bought their NASH insurance credits because they had these gaps, when actually you could have had that from your claiming child benefit. So always claim. But whether then you want to have the money come in, well, that then is when we start looking at, okay, well, what is that household income or your individual income to the people within the household? So it will be triggered on whoever is in the household. It's not a combined income, but once somebody begins to earn over £60,000 a year, then there is a calculation that needs to be undertaken. So, of course, it's not just straightforward, but that transition of every 1%, which is £200, every £200 that you go over £60,000, you lose 1% of your child benefit. So that £200 spread over £60,000 all the way up to £80,000 is 100% of the child benefit, and you would lose it. So lots of people, as I say, when they think, well, I or my husband or my partner, civil partner, whatever, earns over £80,000, they don't bother to claim. But the thing is, you can make a claim and then reject having the payment. So you can actually say, well, but I don't want the money. So you don't need to take that payment.
That's brilliant advice. It makes complete sense that you would do that.
That, of course, leaves lots of people that land within that tax trap, effectively, yeah. Isn't it? Because it means that you're paying a tax on the loss of your child benefit. Now, you can adjust your pay. So there are steps that you can take to adjust your pay. And it is actually quite a good way of boosting your pension. Because if you make a payment into your pension, and that includes those standard auto-enrollment payments that we're now making, everybody gets the opportunity to make those into their pension, that counts towards this adjusted net income calculation. So I can see why lots of people go, oh my gosh, run this past me again, because you think, right, okay, so I earn 62,000, let's say, but you happen to pay £2,000 into your pension. Well, your adjusted net income would go down to £60,000. So you would have full entitlement to your child benefit. And so sometimes, even if it may be a little bit more than you had perhaps wished to pay into your pension, it makes real sense to actually make that additional payment so that you bring that adjusted net income down to within that limit, and you can regain that 1% or 2% or however many percent of the child benefit. And with multiple children, of course, that figure gets bigger. So it's like a larger family tax.
Got it. I got it. Okay. That's brilliant. That's really enlightening, Jeanette. Thanks so much for explaining that. Any other things that maybe we should be aware of in relation to child benefit?
Well, I don't know about you, but I also often get approached for, you know, just giving contributions, sponsorships and all of this. And we merrily tick off gift aid, usually, if we're earning a salary. And then I'm not sure everybody is so good at actually adding them to their tax returns or making HMRC aware of them. Well, they also count with this adjusted net income payment. So if you're giving money to charity, the gross amount, including that gift aid, also can come off. So if you're scrabbling around and you've been generous to charities and your friends over the year, make sure you keep a record of those payments, because not only do they impact your tax, but they also impact things like these adjusted net income calculations. So that's something to be aware of as well.
It certainly is. I had no idea about that either. Oh, that's really, really good to know, because I think a lot of us, we do, like, you get a lot of things coming in from school and friends and family asking you to chip in 20 quid or 30 quid here and there. So it's fantastic to know that. Thank you.
Well, and another point just on that child benefit claim, I don't know if your children are old enough to have had their national insurance number miraculously appear through the post. That is actually connected to a child benefit claim. Believe it or not, that triggers the issuance of your child's national insurance number when they're 16. And if you never claim, they then need to apply for a national insurance number, which, again, you know, is not exactly something that is the first thing on your mind on your 16th birthday. But it's just another piece of housekeeping that would fall to you if you haven't made that child benefit claim. So that's just a secondary thing that we are aware of as well.
Really good to know. I had no idea. And that piece of paper came through the door about a year ago. And so really, really great to know.
We said about the payment that if you haven't claimed child benefit, how you can repair that situation. So should I perhaps explain a bit about that?
Yes, please, Jeanette.
Yeah. So this has been a common problem. And the government have recognised that really it's often women that are impacted by this. So there is going to be a scheme. It was supposed to have come in this year, but there is going to be a scheme where you can claim those missing years. And there will be a form that can be filled in. You can make that application, and the missing gaps in your national insurance record actually will be able to be retrospectively repaired. So it's coming. It was supposed to be this year, but we think now they've said it's been pushed back to April 2027. So if anybody is looking at gaps in their national insurance record, if you've ever been into the portal on the government gateway site, and you can click on your national insurance record, and if you see that there are gaps, there is the opportunity to pay for those national insurance gaps. But I would, if you know that you had a child that was under 12 that you were caring for, and that's why you've got those gaps in your national insurance record, I wouldn't be rushing to pay them just yet. I would keep a note of the fact that come April 2027, we can go back in, we believe this is coming, and it should be launched at that point, and you can repair your record in that way. So that will save you the money.
That's brilliant. I kind of feel like it's all sounding very familiar. And I think it's sounding like conversations I've had, not with the information that you're providing, but with the questions that you're answering through chats with friends. And as you say, mostly women, because more often than not, the primary caregiver is women. I mean, I know that's changing as the generations grow, but that's great to know. Thanks, Jeanette.
No problem.
So we've learned so much about child benefits and how important they are. That link to pensions is an eye opener, and even linking it then to our children, our 16-year-olds, national insurance, that's a bit of a mind blower for me. But let's move on to childcare and early years funding, if that's okay.
Yes, of course.
So tell us about how the system is constructed at the moment, and any flags you want to wave at us.
Well, I mean, I will say this is really complex, because it's a bit of a bolt-on scheme that has evolved over a number of years, and there's different points of provision for different age groups. And that has also been changed from the 15 to the 30 hours. There are caveats as to whether you are working or a working parent, and then the number of hours that you achieve during that work. So there is what we call the working parent's entitlement. And that's basically, if you're, as it says in the description, if you're working and you are doing 16 hours or more at the minimum wage each, so that's each of the adult workers in the household, or if you're just alone, then that would interact with other allowances, but that buys you entitlement to care at 30 hours per week for 38 weeks. And it is for the, I know, the term after the child turns 9 months.
9 months, right.
Now, once you have an older child and you get into the school system, all of these term dates and the number of weeks and the provision, it becomes sort of almost familiar territory. And it's almost like that provision is spreading down towards the younger children. And so for 9 months, it's either the term after they turn 9 months, so the 1st of January, the 1st of April, or the 1st of September, so you can see the school terms effectively, that then they become eligible for that. And that then is applied for and then granted via your provider. Not all providers will actually be in the scheme, so you have to check with the chosen provider, but then they will apply for you via the local authority. This interacts with a further allowance, which is like a tax-free subsidy. So you've got some tax-free childcare, which is all, this is done via a portal, and you basically have up to £2,000 of tax-free subsidy. And that then is layered up. That's where you can lose that childcare subsidy if you breach the £100,000 earnings limit. Now, in the same manner that the child benefit can be adjusted with that adjusted net pay calculation, the same thing applies at this £100,000 limit. But it's a nastier way of applying it, because we would term it cliff edge. You're either a pound over and you lose it, or you're still in it. So you need to be really careful on that, that you don't stray over. But because it's an automatic loss and it interacts with other areas of our taxation system, breaching that £100,000 limit, I know it seems an awful lot of money, and anybody would be very pleased with that. But it's a very expensive thing to do if you have young children, because you can lose that tax-free childcare allowance. So we have a spreadsheet in our office, because it is so complicated to work out. And it was drawn up by one of my colleagues who has two young children to work out how many hours they do, what the subsidy is, when it kicks in, what it applies, what the child-free element is, because it isn't straightforward. But the first port of call, really, I think, is your care provider. Is, are they in the schemes or not? And then you can begin to initiate, am I eligible? Am I earning under 100,000? Okay, right, I've got this multi-layered provision for those younger years.
Brilliant. Oh, thanks so much, Jeanette. I mean, it'll be ringing bells, and it is definitely a lot to absorb. But if any of our listeners are listening live, there'll be a podcast, and you'll be able to kind of scribble notes and listen to it again, because you're clearly an expert on this and you know your stuff.
I think the thing is, there is a universal entitlement that then kicks in when people aren't working. And this adds another layer of complexity when a child in that 3 to 4 gap, which is often that preschool area, that's a different thing again. And then your company may have a nursery subsidy that allows some salary sacrifice. So you can see this is a really, really complex area to navigate. And I do think that one of the government websites that I like is that Best Start in Life. It's the UK government and it has really good frequently asked questions. It doesn't have a spreadsheet for the calculations, but it does actually have good explanations of all of this. And I think it's the sort of thing that if I were listening to myself back, I'm sure I would think, oh my goodness, what? So it's worth a read. And then you can go back and read again, or possibly at some point we'll have a question and answer session or something that may help.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Jeanette. So child benefits, think I wrap my head around it. Childcare and early years funding, very complex, but it sounds like the resources are there online to support you.
Yes.
Great stuff. Thanks so much, Jeanette. Any last tip before we wrap up today? Any last tips for our listeners on those two topics?
No, we said it's mainly women, but of course, if there is, you know, in families now, you and I will have seen dads at the school gate, which is great. If people are taking turns with being a stay-at-home parent, you can swap these allowances for the National Insurance between the people that are claiming the benefit and those that need the credits. All of these things are possible. But the first point is, make sure it's claimed. And then if there are any glitches, there is usually a way of sorting that out.
That's very reassuring, because I think that's a lot of the insecurity around this is just thinking that if you don't do it, it's too late. So there's no point and you might as well just keep plowing ahead. So there is a way back and a way to undo it. And I mean, from my own experience, occasionally when I've had to ring HMRC, they're extremely helpful and nice when you get through.
They are. And I think that was going to be the point, that if you are in any of these tapers with child benefit, it's better to claim it and then do a tax return to ensure that you're not, you know, you're not going to come unstuck at any point. But they're very helpful if you do phone them. And I always say, if you don't get somebody helpful, you have to ring back. Yeah. It's like, have a second attempt.
Yeah, my experience has always been really, really positive. That's brilliant, Jeanette. Thanks so much. We're going to beg you to come back and give us more advice in a few weeks, if that's okay. And thanks so much for your advice, your knowledge, and for sharing it so generously.
Oh, no problem at all. Lovely to speak to you.
So that was Jeanette Kennedy, Chartered Financial Planner at DGS Independent Financial Advisors. Thanks a million, Jeanette.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.